This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Kusu Chuang and Sharit Abdullah. It is 7.06 in the morning, Friday the 6th of September. And overnight, the S&P 500 jumped to a five-week high, led by tech shares, after China and the US agreed to trade talks early next month.
Yeah, so the S&P closed up 1.3%, the Dow Jones closed up 1.4%, the Nasdaq closed up 1.75%.
So at the same time, US bank rallied as yield on 2 years notes jumped up as much as 14 basis points, and which would have been the largest full-day increase in a decade before inching back.
So now for more insight into global markets, we turn to Tim Mulholland, president of TJM Limited. Thank you so much for joining us, Tim. Now, the US economy has been buoyed by strong domestic consumption despite trade war uncertainty. How much will this factor into the Fed's decision-making later this month?
You know, I think maybe only slightly, and for those that were looking for 50 basis points, I think that's off the table. But I think 25 is going to be done. And it's not really so much with the economy. It's really, I think, that the Fed funds rate is the highest interest rate in the entire world. So, therefore, I think they really need to bring it back down to at least 1.75%, which I think may be the real rate of inflation. So I think it's baked in the cake. But any 50 basis point talk, I think, is off the table.
Yeah, Tim, data from the Bank of International Settlements show that central banks have cumulatively delivered 32 rate cuts this year, and swap markets are expecting 58 cuts next year. So in terms of asset classes, what can investors look for in terms of yield next year, given this scenario?
You know, I'd say it's not a good sign why they're going down, because I think what happens is it's more of a deflationary type of event. So, you know, I think that rubber's going to have to start meeting the road. And hopefully, if you get some liftoff here from the U.S.-China trade talks, because U.S. economy is doing fine, and hopefully, I think that'll kick Germany up. And then maybe with this no Brexit talk, the thinking goes that maybe that's going to take another bit of uncertainty out. So I think that interest rates really are going to be pressured by all the corporate issuance that we're seeing, the government supply. So I think from a yield basis here, that we're going to see a steeper yield curve, in my view, starting with the U.S. and maybe hopefully in Europe. But basically, it's the situation with rates going down, I don't think, is bullish.
And Tim, on the subject of bonds, as the global bond rally continues, what's the likelihood of 10-year U.S. Treasury yields heading towards zero?
I think very small. And again, if that ever were to happen, we would be in a major credit crisis-induced deflationary event, which I don't think is going to, which I hope doesn't happen. So I don't think there's a chance of that happening, at least right now. And hopefully we get this liftoff. But if it were to happen and U.S. rates were to go towards zero, I think that would be one of the more bearish things that we can imagine.
And Tim, oil prices also rallied this week following better than expected China data. What's your current outlook for oil, and what kind of headwinds are you expecting?
Yeah, I mean, it's really a supply situation. But right now, I think that we found, you know, the $50 is a floor and $60 probably a ceiling. This is West Texas. But I still think the biggest phenomenon here is the spread narrowing between Brent and the West Texas and Brent. You know, it was out near $10. In fact, I think that thing can even go inverted. And that's really going to be because of the outtake capacity from the Permian Basin and the Gulf. And I think U.S. exports to the rest of the world. So I think oil's $50 to $60. I think that's, you know, maybe more towards $60 a barrel. And I think that's really the equilibrium price.
Thank you so much, Tim. And that was Tim Mulholland, president of TJM Limited, talking to us a bit about oil prices and his expectations thereof, as well as his outlook on the U.S. economy. And he doesn't actually expect a 50 basis point cut from the Fed coming as they head into the meeting soon.
Yeah, I think that's what Donald Trump wants, but I don't think that's what the Fed can deliver because of the underlying strength of the economy just doesn't justify it. And, you know, this whole direction downwards in terms of the expectation for more cuts next year, it's not a good sign. You know, it's not proven to work in the last 12 years. Why would it work this time around?
Yeah, and also his observation or his expectation of the oil prices being between the range of 50 to 60, most likely 60. And I think we'll be keeping an eye on that, especially when a lot of our budget, basically our national budget is being priced in at the price of $70 per barrel. At 65, we're already looking at $1.3 billion short from that $70 price per barrel.
Indeed. But also this morning, looking at some other international stories, it looks like WeWork's IPO won't be quite the celebration the unicorn once foresaw. Now, sources told Bloomberg that the New York-based startup is considering seeking a valuation of about $20 to $30 billion in the IPO, but it could end up closer to $20 billion, which would be less than half of the valuation it secured from its biggest backer just a few months ago.
Yeah, I think this just really goes to exemplify the importance of timing when it comes to IPOs. And, you know, there's a lot of things to note about the WeWork IPO. First of all, the fact that it portrays itself as a tech company when, in fact, a lot of investors don't think it is, because essentially what it does is just leases office space, you know, gussies it up a little bit, and then rents it on to other companies. And just because it's the front end is a technology front end, it doesn't mask the fact that it's essentially a real estate company. There's a couple more concerns about WeWork. The fact that it's very, very opaque about how it conducts and basically enumerates the numbers behind its business, and the fact that Newman, the founder of the company, has a lot of his family members within the business. So yeah, raising a lot of corporate governance concerns.
It is. This is the company that had 10 pages of declarations in its IPO prospectus just because of how intertwined its founder and his family is with the company. So it's a bit of a question mark on that front as well.
Yeah, this is also the guy that owns the building that WeWork is currently leasing in as well. So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of questions there. But it's very important for them to try and get this right with the IPO, isn't it? I mean, because what's at stake, for an example, is the credit line. We're talking about $2 billion worth of letter of credit facility, $4 billion delayed draw for term loan. And all this hinges on how well they are going to do in the IPO.
Well, I tell you what's at stake here. There's no one more person more at stake invested in the interest of this company than Masayoshi Son.
Yes.
His SoftBank business was the last fund in this company at a $47 billion valuation. So the next round comes in at less than half that. He's looking at, you know, basically egg on his face, major egg on his face. I think SoftBank owns 29% of WeWork. So if they fail, so does Masayoshi.
And I think, but the funny thing is then that last week, the Wall Street Journal did report that Adam Newman would be meeting with Masayoshi Son in Tokyo to discuss a potential capital infusion. And this is a source story because the WSJ said that the possibility of SoftBank investing money to enable WeWork to delay the IPO until 2020 was also raised in the discussions. So I guess in this case, it would be a case of, yes, you gave us money at this valuation. You know, it's a little bit of egg on your face, but hey, you've already committed this far. Help us tide us a little bit more over until 2020.
Yeah, it also doesn't help the fact that Uber has done really badly in its IPO since then.
Lyft,
as I see it from the latest news round, is being sued by 14 former employees for all kinds of transgressions on a gender basis within the business.
So, I mean, the similarities between WeWork and Uber and Grab and Lyft, I mean, besides one being supposedly a real estate company, still, until they prove otherwise, and the other one being a tech, is that both of them have very high fixed costs, right? I mean, if you want to put them side by side for other tech companies like Facebook and Microsoft and so forth, they don't have the same business model, the same revenue stream. So is that fixed cost at the end of the day still going to basically pose a challenge for them to make profit? I mean, look at the amount of loss that they're making, $690 million just up to date for this year.
Indeed. And I think with regards to the fact that they're selling themselves like a tech company, you can't deny the fact that if it was a tech company, you know, a tech company develops software, and that software is very easily scalable. And that's not something that WeWork is able to do. And so a lot of analysts...
You can't scale office buildings, right? Even those that you own, Adam Newman.
And so this is something that several analysts from Bloomberg, from other REIT watchers, they've said that WeWork still has to justify why it is seeking tech company level valuations when it is in effect a real estate company. Because what is there that they have to justify that? So far, they haven't shown it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's no surprise that they're chasing tech valuations, because tech valuations are huge multiples, right?
But it's the thing to do. It's trendy right now.
But it's a ruse, isn't it? That's why people are cottoning onto the fact.
In what scale are we talking about here, right? I mean, when we talk about tech application, everybody... So what data is available out there statistic-wise? I mean, everybody owns a smartphone. So that's the platform. That's the scale that they're talking about. For WeWork, they're talking about startups, entrepreneurs. How many entrepreneurs juniors or start, you know, or start uppers or, you know, out there that exists, right? I mean, so I don't think the number is very clear when they are going hard, you know,
trying to sell this idea with this kind of valuations. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see whether or not this actually does get delayed, does eventually make it to market. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.